You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We are going to move very quickly tonight because on this, the internet's, I don't know, sixth most popular podcast. I don't have the numbers behind it, but that just feels right. We're going to discuss college football previews. Oh, yes, college football previews on May 17th, which means we don't know anything. And that's fine. That's fine. You already knew that. And the people who are going to help me break this down, Ryan, how are we doing this week and with what teams? This is Ryan Nanny joining us from Brooklyn.
Yeah, we're continuing our ill-conceived plan wherein we took every Power 5 team, put them in random order, asked our Twitter followers to give us five random numbers, and then just did the five teams that match them. As a result, we have, two more Pac-12 teams, Utah and Oregon, and we have Notre Dame, and we have Minnesota, and we have Kansas, all of which are schools.
All of that's definitely true.
Yep.
All of which are schools that have attempted to field football teams, right?
Many of them state schools. A super majority of them are state schools. Your tax dollars.
Your tax dollars at work is a real strong word.
Well, especially because today is not just any day. Today is our, I think this is something like our sixth annual. Let's find out how much Notre Dame is still paying Charlie Weiss Day. That number for July 2014 through June 2015. Do either of you gentlemen have a guess?
I'm going to cheat. I've already looked it up.
Okay, that's fine.
So you beat me to this. We'll have to ask Jason sight unseen.
So is this out of his total contract, how much he paid?
Just how much he got paid for 1 year of not working.
So how much he made this year off
Notre
Dame? Yes,
just from summer 2014 to summer 2015.
Is it like $4 million?
It's not quite that high.
$3
million? It's a little over two.
Okay.
Over two. Although
I am overbidding significantly on Charlie Weiss.
Well, it's mostly that the money was spread out. So
call me the Florida Gators, I guess.
All right, that's not even close.
We're not even close to the team that overbid for Charlie Weiss the most.
We were the ones still paying Will Muschamp. It's different because makes us mad.
We pay for honest fraud, not outright fraud.
I like that you guys paid him to only do half as much work, and it was still bad.
I mean, yeah. Did you see Auburn games? But we're not here to talk about Auburn.
Never. We wouldn't dream of it.
The most entertaining thing about that contract, by the way, is that Weiss earned $2 million, which is about $430,000 more than Brian Kelly earned over the same period from 2014 to 15. Yeah. That contract's been redone, but I like to rub salt in wounds wherever I see the crimson flowing. And right there, that's pretty bitter. In addition to that, by the way, I'd like to remind everyone the total compensation that Charlie Weiss received, I believe this was after one season, one successful season when his contract was extended, and they just jumped right into bed with him. Isn't that a visual? Since he was fired, he's earned $16,912,123.
But they're almost done. They have one more big payment to make, and then they will have paid him just under $19 million, and then they're free.
Why not just pay it off now?
Well, Jason, have you ever met someone with student loan debt?
I believe so.
Okay. It's sort of like that, except you can't, because you're an institution and not a person, you can't even fake your own death and get out of it.
So Notre Dame can't fake its own death?
I mean, they could.
I mean, it's kind of a perfect circle kind of thing, because when you want to fake your death as a football program, you hire Charlie Weiss. But the only way to escape from paying Charlie Weiss is you have to hire him again. Oh, shit, that's how he did it.
The perfect
catch 22. You know who I'm not getting in a tontine with in a death pool? Charlie Weiss. I know how this works. They'll all put money on Charlie and be like, man, Charlie's going to die first. You know?
No. Nope.
No, he's living to like 108. Or in other words, just before South Carolina manages to finish paying off the contract that they signed him on in like 2020 after Muschamp.
I mean, Charlie's riding around with Elon Musk money at this point. He's done replaced all his blood with magical regenerating nano blood.
Nano machines.
He'll never die.
I'll go 3-13 forever.
That's a superior schematic advantage of the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
That, in addition to that, by the way, just a reminder, last time Charlie Weiss coached for Notre Dame was 2009.
God damn.
And of course, this killer contract that he's still coasting off of, it was, what was it, like 3 or 4 games into a season that it just appeared? I'm not going to look it up. No. But it was something like that. Just take my word for it. It was like they were, you know, just a basic 4-1 or something.
And it was
Zeppelin dropped.
The Notre Dame bullion Zeppelin. That, and also remember, somehow in between this, he had a stint as the head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks, which I think gets us to the team we probably want to discuss first. And be real brief
naturally
about it.
Because these go in order of interest and tenacity.
Yeah, which, so we're doing it in reverse order then.
Yeah.
Starting with Notre Dame.
Oh, that's
no, we're gonna we're gonna wait on that.
I'm kidding.
We're gonna wait. We will talk
about Notre Dame as last.
Save it, savor it.
We are gonna talk about Notre Dame. But the other teams we have to discuss. Let's not start with Kansas.
Aww.
Oh, God. Let's not just.
All right. Well, let's start with one of our two big Pac-12 teams. You want to do Utah or Oregon?
Let's do Oregon. Let's just go off with a bang with big, shiny Oregon.
All right.
That's a meaty topic.
Anybody got anything? No?
Nope. Anyway, so.
So, yeah, let's get to that hot Kansas football action.
Okay. As for Utah. So Oregon, they got Brady Hoke. Brady Hoke's back.
Mm-hmm.
In case speaking of coaches,
dollar store Charlie Weiss.
Yeah,
which means the next time we open it up for questions, which will be September, I guess, we'll get lots of Brady Hoke Oregon questions.
Oh, wait a second. So Oregon hired Brady Hoke to be a coordinator. He's gonna last 1 year, and then Kansas is gonna. Goddamn, it's just. Kansas isn't going to learn this lesson. Well, congratulations, 2017 Kansas Jayhawks head coach Brady Hoke. We look forward to the great things you're going to do, possibly punching Bob Stoops in the head.
Or Brian Kelly takes the New York Giants job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Brady Hoke to Notre Dame.
That's...
Ooh, It's
anyway, or Oregon football.
Sorry, focus on Oregon.
So, can I just ask the uncomfortable question?
Sure.
Is Mark Helfrich good at his job?
No one knows.
which part of that job?
The part where he takes a successful Oregon program and continues to be successful with it.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, you know, like the offense part.
Oh, you wanted me. Let's go with the don't give up a 4+ touchdown lead in a bowl game part.
Yeah, it's pretty bad at that part so far.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Now let's, before we do this, let's remember that the dispelling the myth that having anything moving forward out of a bowl is kind of, I think, illusory. Right?
I mean,
it's not necessarily the thing that would bother me if I were an Oregon fan.
Yeah.
Would not be anything that had happened in a bowl game.
Right.
Okay.
Unless it was sort of emblematic of your problem in general, and you didn't do anything about it.
Which is to say, that problem was you were great with Vernon Adams when he was healthy, and when he wasn't, oh boy.
Right. Yeah. So the two problems that got exposed in the bowl game is you did not have a long-term plan at quarterback, and your defense was very bad.
Yeah.
The defense has been bad, like been porous.
Only a couple years now.
Yeah, a couple of years. So that's one thing that you go, okay, I don't think you can do that real well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty clear on that. In addition to that, the thing that really would have worried me, like I always think when you fall off and you fall off hard, there's one game you point to where you go, oh, we're not what we used to be.
And I know where you're going to go. Ahead, just go with it.
Yeah, you're guessing
just do
that.
It. Just do it.
You're guessing the 62-20 loss in Eugene to the Utah Utes?
It's the in Eugene part that was very galling.
Yeah, and if you look at this game, like 62, it's 62-20, and that's a pretty gentle 62-20 in the second and the third quarters against one of the worst defenses like in recent history in Oregon, and with a misfiring offense, Utah managed to score 49 points in two quarters at home at Eugene. Like, that's the loss where I go, yeah, I kind of sort of think Helfrich can't do his job. That's just my guess.
I guess when you see a power, or at least a recent power, lose in such a way that makes you think they've swapped jerseys with the other team, that's when you worry. Like, if you saw Bama lose, you know, in some weird shootout, you don't worry all that much. If you see Bama just get run over, you worry. If you see Oregon get blasted 49 points in two quarters, this is not Oregon. This is Oregon, like, you know, this is what Oregon is supposed to do to people.
Yeah, you lose by, just say it out loud. It sounds so good and bad. You lose by 42 at home.
42 points. That's.
Yeah. Yeah. That ain't happening. That's like muy, muy bad for everything that you want as an indicator for your program. And,
so they hired Brady Hoke to fix that.
yeah. By the way, yeah, then you blow a 31-point lead in a bowl game. So there's that. There are positives here, right? Like, one, we're always wrong. Like, all three of us, right?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes we were wrong in the sense that we thought Oregon was going to, you know, transition better than we thought they would after losing Marcus Mariota, but
yeah,
that's like, okay. We can be wrong in both ways. Doesn't matter.
I probably picked Oregon for the playoff last year, so yeah, I was pretty wrong there.
I mean, they still have the kind of guys you point to and go, "Oh, they have Royce Freeman."
Yeah.
Uh huh.
They have Charles Nelson. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. They have another FCS quarterback who is tall this time, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that Dakota Prukop?
Uh huh.
Yeah, Dakota Prukop coming
in. Which the things I can tell you about this young man could fill a tweet.
Tweet. I mean, I think at this point I worry that Oregon football is the Casey Jones of football teams, where it's like, man, they got a bag full of all kinds of stuff. They got a hockey stick and a lacrosse stick and a basketball. And exactly what is it you do with those? Oh, I see. You don't really have a plan. You just sort of have a lot of equipment. That's cool.
Yeah, you got stuff. And by the way, this is like, if you don't think that Phil Knight won't fire Helfrich for going 8-4, then you are incorrect. He will. This is not how Phil Knight, known for the insane quota, known for the "I don't know how you're going to do it, but that's what I want." A guy who, yeah, wears a headset during games. You don't want, like, one of my great distastes for the NFL is the consistent involvement of the owner as a character in things. Because, mm-hmm. you know, unless you're Jerry Jones, I don't care. Jerry at least is going to do something to entertain me and look, you know, like hayseed crazy somewhere. This is one of the few instances in college football where you can very clearly say, yeah, that guy. That guy's the owner. Because he's been caught wearing a headset on camera.
And the most he's had to say about it was that it wasn't connected.
Yeah.
Oh, it's decorative.
No, this is just cheap beats. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. This Chance the Rapper album sounds great on them.
Just listening to my praise and worship.
Just got that Kirk Franklin in there. That's the guy who will make this decision. And if it's him making the decision, 8 wins ain't going to cut it. Especially when you consider their schedule, which has like a lot of extremely winnable games. Like if I take you through it, you get like UC Davis, ding, 1. You get Virginia. Virginia, that's a 2. Mm-hmm. There's no way Virginia's going to like know what they're doing by then. Nebraska, that's at Lincoln, but it's Nebraska. You know, I think like that they could probably win that game. Then Colorado, they probably don't lose a game until Washington State at Pullman.
And that feels like that should be maybe similar to last year's game, a close thing that goes to overtime or whatever. But it also is helped by the fact that you're right, it's a road game. And if you lose to Washington State now, it's not as bad as it looked previously. So
I feel like the longer we go through these, by the time we get to Washington State, we'll have them at like 11-1.
Okay.
Because every time it's like, oh, well, sure, you'll lose to Washington State. But.
Right.
Well, they've got really like their toughest games are at Utah, mm-hmm. right? At USC on the road. And then they get Stanford in Eugene. So it's a pretty favorable schedule, especially because rival Oregon State happens to be grandiosely in the tank and probably will be for at least another year or two.
Yep.
Right.
I'd say you beat Washington home, you win at Nebraska, you know, at Washington State could be tough. Other than that, pretty good chance at 8-0, you know, if you get past those few games.
But like I would understand, like if you go 8-4 with the schedule, you should probably be fired.
Yeah.
That's if Phil Knight's making the call, then yeah, that's what he's gonna do.
Just because it's a sign that you're letting things slide. It doesn't mean you're terrible. It just means you're not treading water at this point. You're sinking a little bit.
It just means Lane Kiffin's available.
Ooh boy.
Ooh.
Ooh boy. Yeah. You know, he's never failed in the Pac-12 North. and we see what going to a different division did for him in the SEC. So let's just be fair.
It's like we're moving a plant around to find where in the house mm-hmm. it'll actually get sunlight.
Where is
like,
where
the plant just keeps dying.
Where is this Lane Kiffin best for feng shui?
evidently under a very short shade tree in Tuscaloosa.
I thought it was on the tarmac. I was wrong.
Yeah. I thought he flourished, you know, yeah, on the tarmac mm-hmm. at LAX. I still want to do the plaque, the Lane Kiffin Memorial plaque that we just, you know, like flash glue to one of the pillars at LAX and don't tell anybody, like put it real low on the pole.
Or like we make it a thing to go to like go there and look fired, call it like Kiffining.
No, he's so much wealthier than any of us. That's the best part of the joke.
So is Mark Helfrich. So
he's Mark Helfrich. Yeah, we can say anything we want about him, right? He's richer than we are.
That's true.
Mark, you're totally going to be fired. And you're failing right now. And you're worth so much more money than any of us. Next!
Utah! Let's talk about Utah! Turn up for Utah! No?
You're the first person to use the phrase, you turn up and Utah in the same sentence.
Well, no. That's not true. Kidnapped woman turns up in Utah.
Yeah. I was trying to think of something that a Utahn would turn the volume up on, and I could not think of one. But yeah, you got it.
And just, you know what? And if Utah football isn't the unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt of football teams.
Kyle Whittingham certainly is.
Yeah, like, how long has Kyle Whittingham had that job?
He has been there since 2005. There are only 3 coaches that have been in their that have been at their current position longer than Kyle Whittingham.
He's by Pac-12 in Pac-12 years. Kyle Whittingham is basically Bill Snyder.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, no, he's the Don.
I'm pretty like, sure most
by a long shot. I think
I'm pretty sure most Pac-12 teams have had at coming up on three coaches since in the time that he's been at Utah. UCLA for sure has.
That doesn't even count all the time Sonny Dykes has left Cal and come back.
he just loves him too much.
Cal's probably had about 11 coaches if you really break it down.
Washington State's had three. Yeah, it's... Whew.
Man, Washington State had a three. Oh, my God.
They did. We're not going to... We'll get to the Washington State preview, or maybe we won't. And if... I mean...
Wolfpack!
I mean, if you really want to be dark about it, Tyrone Willingham started at Washington the same year that Kyle Whittingham started at Utah. So,
ooh,
yeah,
goodness,
yeah. That's how long ago it is, though. That's how distant it is that his tenure began.
You know, it's a state that builds the planes that carry thousands of people through the air every single day in the United States, and it's also the state that at one point hired Tyrone Willingham and Paul Wolf to be the football coaches of their flagship institutions football teams.
Was last year the Utah year that was supposed to be the producers, where the Utah athletic department basically did nothing to retain Utah's staff after a, I would say, reasonably successful 2014, where they went 9-4, and I don't know. It just had this feeling like, okay, yeah, we'll give you another year, and you're going to fall flat on your face, and then we can kick you out the door, and nobody will go be mad. But then he beat Michigan and Oregon, and those are the only two that really mattered that much, but and BYU in a bowl game. And
yes.
Now he's fine? I don't know. Is Kyle Whittingham fine? Nothing makes sense.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks after the coaching carousel two years ago that, you know, the rumors were Utah might fire Kyle Whittingham. Mm-hmm. Like, I think even the rumors had a question mark on it. Right. It was like, even if, a top source comes and tells you that, it still doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then he went and, you know, at one point was ranked in the top five last year. And, yeah, now dad's fine again.
Dad's
never leaving us.
Buff dad.
Buff dad has all his hair and a strong core.
Yeah, no.
And a good job.
Kyle Whittingham is the dad who takes his shirt off at the pool and turns some heads, you know?
I mean, like, it is pretty Utah to be stuck in a marriage that you're not sure if it makes you happy, but, well, we'll just stick it out.
I got a gym membership. That's Kyle Whittingham. I don't know, man. See how it works.
He's not actively awful. Marriage.
There you have it.
Yeah. But this year, they kind of have a similar thing to Oregon going, don't they? In terms of what they should do with this schedule.
No, this is a highly drinkable schedule. If we were describing it as a beer, meaning
they caught Michigan in the two right years to do it.
They did. And in addition to that, they also pick up BYU in a year where they've got some regime change going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're out of conference games, Southern Utah and San Jose State. That's some Florida ass scheduling right there.
No, because they're playing a team in their state.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
And fight me, Miami.
In addition to that,
please don't.
No, yeah, not in the face. And then their road games, like, they really only have one or two super tough road games.
Can we talk about the confusing-ass road game?
Yes, please, go ahead.
They're playing at San Jose State the third week of the season.
I mean, don't you want to go to San Jose? Don't you want to see San Jose sometime?
I don't understand this decision at all.
This is like Baylor. Didn't Baylor play at Buffalo?
Baylor played at Buffalo. LSU played at Syracuse. Nothing makes sense. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, right now there are dozens of Florida State fans. They can feel it crying out that they need to just tell someone that Miami plays at App State. Because this is, I swear that's going on FSU's, like, official schedule poster this year. By the way, Miami's playing at App State. Losers.
This is a good bud you just did.
I forgot. I had completely forgotten that until you mentioned
but
it.
You're my right. God. But other than that, their road games are at Cal, at Oregon State, at UCLA, which UCLA is a fine team, but the Rose Bowl scares no one, I'm sorry, at Arizona State, and at Colorado.
Yeah, so really, like, at Arizona State, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were circling at UCLA.
No. I'm not circling at UCLA because...
There's just nothing about playing UCLA on the road that strikes you as worse than playing them at home.
You have to sit in a plane for a while.
You do, and if you're looking for your parents in the back rows of the Rose Bowl, they're super far away. So that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, you can see, I was going to say, you can see them. You can still see them. You'll be able to identify them individually out of the stands.
I guess I feel like the whole Pac-12 this year, every schedule looks pretty manageable because no single team really jumps out as a, you know, as an overwhelming favorite. You know, like a lot of people think. It might be the power conference with the least consensus on who's going to win it, I guess.
Well, and there's also, I mean, the overall, unless I'm forgetting something major, there's not a ton of great non-conference games for them this year.
Which is handy, because last year it did not go well.
Well, there's
so
that.
I think you, bumping down the difficulty a little bit, yes, we know Utah beat Michigan and all that, but dialing it down a little bit is a pretty good idea this year. Just lay low. Lay low and let everybody else do some damage to themselves.
And then there's
USC playing Alabama and Notre Dame. Always showing off.
With a first year coach. Enjoy that. Utah, by the way, like, it's going to look a lot like every other Utah team. You're like, well, lost a running back, probably got a pretty good running back. We're going to use him a lot. Our quarterback, yeah, we'll have one. They will definitely have one.
Someone will play that position. I did. I should, before somebody yells at me, I did forget that USC plays Alabama this year and Colorado plays Michigan. So, cool.
Yeah.
Please continue talking about the Utah roster intelligently and with names that we know.
Names? Oh, yeah. Such as the many Pacific Islander names that always flourish throughout the Utah front seven.
Alex Smith?
Yes, him.
Let me give you the best name from that, actually, two of them. Curtis Talfa and David Laufatasaga.
Great.
Mackey.
Yeah, both, by the way, of course, defenders. They just sound like defenders.
There's also a Lotulelei, isn't there?
Yeah, I believe there's always a Lotulelei. Yeah. A Lotulelei.
His first name is Lowell, which is amazing poetry that I hope to be able to conquer like by mid-November.
That's going
to
destroy an announcer, and I love it.
Can we get Vern Lundquist to call like a Utah-Hawaii game?
Actually, he will be very deliberate. He would go on the tackle is Lowell.
Low to Lele.
And then the background, Gary going low to Lele.
Gary would say it right, but he'd have the accent on the wrong syllable.
Low to Lele.
I think he would say it in such a way that would make you think he disapproves of Lowell. Like, sure. He thinks Lowell's doing a really bad job, even though he's just saying his name.
Latulelei!
He says that, and Lowell looks up like, what? What did I do?
I will admit it. I think Utah is a disrespected team, and I think there's one thing they can do that would instantly change at least my knee-jerk assumptions about who they are and what they can do. And that thing is convince Steve Smith to retire and come coach wide receivers for them.
Okay.
I would immediately be like, oh, they got Steve Smith on the sideline? Yeah, they'll fuck you up.
Yeah, that's a tough team. Whole team.
Oh, you think Utah's too small? Yeah, they got Steve Smith, man. That don't matter.
Watch this. Steve Smith as wide receivers coach would be fascinating because I think he'd actually be pretty good at it.
Sure.
And two, suddenly their wide receivers would start throwing the hardest haymakers in college football.
Uh-huh. Like your wide receivers are either injured or penalized or awesome. No central ground between those three things.
Never forget that Steve Smith and Chad Ochocinco Johnson played at the same community college.
Yeah, that community college was awesome.
Community college is the best.
A phenomenal community college. That and that, and if you'll remember the celebration, this is the Oregon State Hushmanzada Johnson celebration, which is one of the greatest bowl celebrations ever, was in a bowl game where Notre Dame was being torched by an Oregon State team. One of my favorite class victories ever. That Notre Dame got pasted by Oregon State.
Oh.
The proletariat sings.
Do we want to do Notre Dame next, or?
No. We're going to save them for last.
Okay. Not quite yet.
Okay, yeah. So now your choices are Kansas or Minnesota.
I thought we already did Kansas.
We really didn't.
Hang on. We got to pick win totals for Oregon and Utah.
Oh,
I think
okay.
We set Oregon's success bar at 9-3. I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do we think they'll hit that?
I could do that. Yeah. I think they could. Yeah.
I think they'll hit it. I think they'll hit it and cause all sorts of hot seat anguish in the process.
Because it's still extremely minimal success bar.
Yeah.
And Utah 8-4, perhaps.
Yeah, they always feel like 8-4 to me, man.
But
yeah,
it'll be a good 8-4, a gutsy 8-4 with a confusing loss to Colorado in there.
A really filling 8-4.
That's really, you know what? Like when you're looking at projections, Colorado is actually the most powerful team in the Pac-12 in terms of forecasting, because if they're not bad, then there are problems, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if Colorado fucks around and goes 8-4, that means everybody's going 8-4.
But look, Utah is already capable of being three different teams in a season. The same team that went on the road, as we've said, Oregon fans aren't listening anymore, so it doesn't matter. So we can remind you that they beat Oregon by scoring 62 points, lost to UCLA at home 17-9. Same team. Did those things, both of them.
Yep.
You can't explain that.
Let's talk about Kansas.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Let me distract you.
let me give you the headline from Bill C's piece. Kansas will definitely win a game.
Oh shit!
In 2016.
Oh shit!
Definitely.
He didn't say definitely. Where'd that come from?
You'll definitely win a game. He didn't say that, but he said he said that they would probably win a game. So that's good.
Yeah. Last year's headline was Kansas will get exercise and fresh air, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So things are really looking up.
Hey, do you want to know something fun?
Sure.
Kansas scored more touchdowns than Vanderbilt and Missouri last year. Okay, bye. Missouri, you only scored 16 touchdowns all year, you stupid assholes. And you scored four of them in your first game against Southeastern Missouri State.
You ate all your snacks first.
Oh, you dummy. Kansas outscored Missouri.
Oh, boy.
You literally ate everything in bags. That's all you did. You went shopping, and then you ate everything that was in a bag or a ready-made package. You fools.
That's why I wish the border war was still on, just to see last year's Kansas-Missouri game.
Also, the first header, by the way, the first header of Bill's Kansas preview for this year is, one, a new low.
Yeah. Because for the past, five, 6 years, we've kept thinking, surely Kansas can't get worse.
Uh-huh. And now they can't.
And now
it's
finally,
true.
They can't.
Now it's true. Unless they somehow lose a game and get sanctioned for it.
Now it would require losing to Rhode Island. Rhode Island is actually a bad FCS team.
Yeah.
Yeah, and can I tell you though? Like, this is, you go, okay, well, Kansas is going to be bad, and you just want some competition, right? That's what you want. Their burned out roster is slowly healing.
Yeah, they will have more than 32 scholarship players or whatever it was. So that'll be good.
So remember, that's what Charlie Weiss leaves you with.
Another legacy of the Charlie Weiss era. He stole all your copper.
He stole all of your copper, stripped the pipes, and all of your TVs. Even the ones that weren't flat screens, like the old big tube TVs. He took those too.
He stole your TV made of copper. Why did you have that?
Thank you, Charlie Weiss, provisions and lamp purchasing expert. This is what Kansas has to face, by the way, and it's real hard to find a win.
This schedule is disgusting.
It's so bad because they start with Rhode Island,
yeah,
and then I don't see a win. Maybe Iowa State. Maybe
you got Ohio at home. You got Iowa State at home. Ohio's decent. Iowa State always likes to fight.
Yeah, Iowa State I'm willing to call them a question mark at this point.
Yeah, they like to fight.
You got Texas at home, and Texas has shown a capability of losing dumb games on the road.
Texas can do anything. The other thing that is awesome here is they only have one bye week because the Big 12 bunches. It likes to have a few games that matter on that December. That weekend in December. So, yeah, Kansas gets its entire conference slate all in a row.
It's bad. And they have, like, no back-to-back home games in this stretch until they get to the end of the season. Like, by the time they get to that Oklahoma game right before Halloween, they will have already played Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma State in a row. I think that game might not even air on television. It could be so like, bloody and brutal.
After you play Rhode Island in week one, let's say you win that. Let's just a hypothetical flight of fancy say Kansas wins that game.
Bill never lies.
Yep.
Then you're just looking at 11 straight losses, and maybe you've so sad. Maybe you like luck up and sneak away with one over Ohio. That's as good as it gets right now. Maybe you beat Ohio.
Like, how the hell do you like? I've asked coaches this before, but when you go, you know, like, it's going to be bad, y'all. Like, how do you pitch that, you know? And it's a really, like, I've never really gotten a great answer. Coaches always have an answer that sounds like it makes sense, right? You're like, well, we're just, you know, all we're doing is we're teaching maturity. And you just go in there. We're just going to have a good time. That's not, I mean, yeah, you said that out loud.
Listen, those
are words.
These are building block years, and that's fine. And you know what they're building for? That 2023-2024 home and home with Illinois.
Ooh, yeah.
I remind you that Kansas went to an Orange Bowl under Mark Mangino.
I don't want to be dark. Some of our podcast listeners will be dead by 2023 and 2024. And while that's sad for a number of reasons, you're not going to have to watch Kansas Illinois.
We're just playing numbers, y'all.
Yeah. We'll miss
not dark at all. You're looking for positives here.
Like, man, hopefully I'll be gone by then. I don't want to watch that. That'd be awesome.
All right, can we move on to Minnesota, please?
Yeah, speaking of the sweet embrace of icy death itself.
Okay. And also go ahead and finish that word.
Minnesota football.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But speaking of coaches and expectations, this is a team where the head coach is Tracy Clays, who was a former frequent interim and is now the full-time head coach. Someone asked him, you know, what are you expecting this year or whatever? And he said, oh, probably like 8 to 10 wins. So he sort of set a number for himself, just really called his shot. And okay, let's see if you can hit it. I just thought that was interesting because usually coaches, it's one game at a time or whatever. But Minnesota's set a mark for itself.
They have, and they had a difficult thing happen, right, to your football program.
They did.
Yeah, which is your coach just not being able to do the job for health reasons, finally.
And the replacement not understanding how to end a game against Michigan.
Yeah, you want to just remind everyone?
No, I really don't. Michigan fans will do it for us. And you know what? You deserve Michigan. It's cool. Minnesota fans don't want to hear about it. They got to. I mean, you lost 29-26 in... Fine, you can tell them. I don't care.
No, let's come back to it. I'm not ready emotionally to discuss it.
Okay.
It was bad.
It was bad. Yeah, it was bad. That's all that needs to be said. It was bad.
Time management. A time management fiasco and a series of strategic blunders so bad, like so grandiose.
I mean, not Nebraska bad.
No,
Nebraska bad.
Hey, listen, you got to score points. It's the only way to manage the end of a game. That's a score
good point.
Points.
That's a good point.
if you score more points than they do, you never lose, right? Right?
I mean, in some sense, that's true.
Yeah, in some, see? Don't yep. do this some sense shit with me.
I used to be a lawyer. I don't know what you, I can't commit to anything.
except student loans, baby.
Aw, again, just fake your own death, kids.
But yeah, exactly. Faking your own death, a really underrated skill that not enough people embrace anymore. No. What's more hipster and small batch than faking your own death? Mm-hmm. It's a small batch. It's literally one fake death.
Limited edition, 1-1.
Yeah, and like most exclusive hipster endorsed brands, it's kind of a fraud.
Why you gotta let the government own witness security relocation? Do it yourself.
You know you can get that fake death at any factory wholesale and mm-hmm. just put a fancy wrapper on it.
Shh. This is just chocolate we melted down and called fake death.
Wow, it's like this $9 fake corpse is just a $1 one with better packaging.
So Minnesota, sorry.
I think you mentioned something about chocolate in there, right?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so that brings us back to Minnesota.
Okay.
Dilly bars and whatever.
Dilly bars and like jolly obesity.
This schedule is...
It's something. It exists.
Really bad. I mean, not Kansas unfortunate bad, just no. unpleasant bad. Oregon State, Indiana State, Colorado State at home.
No, you start with four states in a row. That's just
yeah, that's all mm-hmm. Oregon, Indiana, Colorado, and Pennsylvania State. You can go 3-1 through there. You ought to. You better.
Not gonna go 3-1, yeah. In the next one. Not gonna do that.
Then the tough stuff starts with Penn State. Penn State, Iowa, at Maryland. Maryland could be quite a bit improved, I think. Not great or anything, but I don't think.
But not a chalk it up as a W.
Right, right. Rutgers at home, sure W. Purdue at home, W. I see 5 or 6 wins. I don't know how you get to 8 though.
Yeah, you got to flip some stuff that you're not supposed to flip.
It is partially dependent on some of these schools having bad years. Northwestern having a swoon year. Maybe Wisconsin having a stupid year. Some of these things are possible. Will all of them happen? I don't know. And you're, as I was reminded, again by Michigan fans, the hopes of Minnesota football rest with very tall, very throwy quarterback Mitch Leidner.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know?
First rounder on Todd McShay's early draft board.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, look it up.
Yeah, that's the part they wanted to talk about.
Good God, Todd McShay.
Hey, let's play a fun game. How many games last year did Mitch Leidner throw for, I don't know, let's say 3 touchdowns?
None.
Okay. How many games last year did he throw for, I don't know, 350 yards?
Definitely. 0.
Hmm. Well, there are other things that go into being quarterback.
Such his height. Mm-hmm. Where did he rank in passer rating among all quarterbacks? Was it like 70th?
Among all quarterbacks, I'm looking as we speak, 87th.
Grr!
87th. eight spots behind Christian Hackenberg.
Ugh.
12 spots behind Joel Stave. Ooh, this is. Let's see.
What round was Joel Stave picked in?
Second round. A whopping 21 spots behind Tommy Armstrong Jr. Oh boy, yeah, it's
wow. So you're just going straight for the comparing him to Big Ten quarterbacks.
But ahead of Treon Harris.
Thank you. Well. We were talking about quarterbacks though, so that's kind of an unfair comparison.
Hey, just because he's not now doesn't mean he wasn't then.
The same goes for Joel Stave.
I go by what's in the heart, not what the feet show. And what his heart said. Well, actually, what his heart said was quarterback, and what his feet said was, kind of a ninth string wide receiver.
The Bible is full of those who started in one position and were called to a different one.
Is it?
For various reasons. God sure. called them.
Sure.
God called them multiple names.
Treon Harris is Florida's version of the Apostle Paul.
Yeah, this feels like a 5-win team. Like, if I was looking at it, It's like five or six wins.
Well, and the problem is it's going to start. It could. I don't necessarily think they're going to beat Penn State on the road, but let's say they do, and they start 4-0. Oh man, it's gonna be unfortunate when everybody's like, "Uh-oh, here comes Minnesota, big boys in the Big Ten, ready to reclaim past glory." Oh shit, we lost to Maryland.
Extremely past glories. I mean, I don't think Iowa at home is all that brutal of a game.
Right.
Disrespect.
Already the Iowa disrespect starts.
I know, man. You're talking about.
Adam Jacoby were here. He would take issue, sir.
You're talking about formerly undefeated Iowa.
Uh-huh. Aren't we all?
Rose Bowl participant, Iowa.
Speak for yourself.
That's true. I only made it about 2 days.
I was going to say, born with a couple of L's in the record, man.
I mean, the schedule's not brutal, but I agree. I was thinking 6 or 7 wins, but since you said 5, I'm going to go towards 6.
Okay. It's gonna turn on some unfortunate games. Like we'll probably look back at, I don't know, maybe that game in Champaign, be like, oh, that's where they could have got bowl eligible. Shit. Or oh, that's where they did. Good job, guys.
Oh man, we're gonna get Tracy Glaze versus Lovie Smith clock management, and so it'll be like 16-15 or something. And who's going to call the most amazing timeout?
Why is the halftime show Rex Grossman singing Feeling on Your Booty?
Why would it not be?
I was going to say, man, like what else does Rex like want to do with his life? He's done it all.
That's true.
He might as well do that. By the way, I think I'm ready.
Okay.
To talk about the end of the Michigan-Minnesota game.
Yeah.
Because, all right, listen, first-year coaches, you can make a lot of mistakes in terms of your time management, your management. Les Miles did this very famously, repeatedly even, okay? Not exactly the fastest-moving team, Minnesota, okay? Not a hurry-up, definitely not anything that you would say was any kind of, you know, grand, speedy kind of coterie of players. Nope, not that at all. However, when they were trailing 29-26, Minnesota's the 26 here, okay, and they had the ball in first and goal on, like, the one.
Yeah, I mean, you can start this way back before then if you want, but please, go ahead.
Yeah, no. Let me just put it this way. Okay. They sauntered down
right
to the end zone, yeah. Okay?
When they got the ball, there were almost 5 minutes left on the clock.
Yep. And they did what you're supposed to do. They get down there, okay? And you want, you know, ideally, I think if you would, you'd want to have first and goal with at least like, you know, 30 seconds on the clock, right?
Yeah.
They get first and goal with a running clock. And when they line up, there are 17 seconds on the clock. And then they get into a play and start shifting with a running clock.
Yep.
On first and goal. Then they pass. Then they opt to not kick the field goal to go to overtime. And they got stuffed at the one. Yep. So out of that they run one play. All right, with 16 seconds, and that's after like multiple shifts.
That's great. Yes, yeah. I mean, because they, and on this this drive had the makings of, oh, this is, you know, something we talk about. Long after the fact, they converted a 3rd and 17 deep in their own territory. They converted a 4th and 5 near midfield. Like there were moments of promise, and then it all fell apart at the end. Just all of it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's you, Minnesota. 5 wins. I'm calling 5.
All right.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, we are talking about a first-time head coach who took the job mid-season.
Yeah. Surely he
spent the entire offseason playing Madden to study up on those late game situations and all that.
This was his literal first game as head coach, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It was right around there. And he came up with Jerry Kill, so it's not like he got a lot of those late game reps.
This was Tracy Glaze's first game as head coach. So all said, as a Florida fan, I'll tell you, losing to Michigan by 3. That's fine.
That's a great score.
That's not too bad.
Been there.
That's not too bad.
Losing to Michigan by 1 score, you've done a good job.
No, that's the thing, Spencer. We haven't.
No, no, we've been there. Stop it. It was a nail biter.
How many years ago was that?
It was 14-7, and I'm dyslexic.
you want to keep the taillights in distance.
I can't read the license plate. All right. Rip the Band-Aid off, Spencer.
All right. So we have to talk about we saved it for last. We're finally going to talk about Notre Dame.